Casey Nelson, good morning.
Good morning.
The investigation by the Federal Department of Justice centered on Birch School at Mount Pleasant High School in Providence and a company called Training Through Placement. What did it uncover about those institutions?
First and foremost, it uncovered that both Birch and Training Through Placement, also known as TTP, were segregating people with developmental disabilities, and they were restricting them to work in sheltered workshops, which could range from screwing tops on bottles to jewelry work, mostly manual labor for subminimum wage.
And the wages they were receiving were sort of random.
They were. They weren't calculating the rates of compensation required for subminimum wage under the Fair Labor Standards Act. So some people were getting 50 cents an hour, others were getting $2 an hour. It was really a range.
And for your article, you interviewed some students and parents from the Birch School, including one young man named Nick Garcia. You write that he's quite computer savvy, which might seem surprising to some readers since he was placed in a special program for people with developmental disabilities. Were you surprised by the people you met while you were researching this story?
Absolutely. Especially with Nick. Those aren't his only abilities. He's, you know, very athletic, social. He's really interested in computer work, and he loves PowerPoint, and he's always on the internet. And I think what the problem here was that he didn't have access to programs within the school, within Birch, that would help him further his understanding and his education.
Do you have any sense of how someone like Nick ended up in this program and why?
I do, yes. A lot of students with developmental disabilities were referred to Birch in Providence. It was a widely respected program just because the principal, Larry Roberti, was very beloved by the community.
You mentioned the principal at Birch, Larry Roberti, and the fact that he was very well respected by the community. And that's one of the things that really struck me about your story is that many of the families involved never complained about the program. In fact, they tried to protect this principal. And yet their own children were being consigned to lives of menial labor for less than minimum wage. Casey Nelson, what do you make of that?
I think there are several different ways to answer that question. The first of which is he, you know, was there for the students. He was in the hallways interacting with them. He was supportive and he bolstered their, you know, self-esteem. And sheltered workshop work was totally normal and is still totally normal. It's still very much a part of pre-vocational training for people with developmental disabilities, whether they're students or adults. So it's something that isn't rare in the United States.
It seems revealing to me the fact that students who had perfectly good, in some ways, intellectual abilities were being referred to this program. The fact that their parents never complained and maybe didn't even know what they were doing, it seemed revealing to me about a larger attitude about what you can expect for a person with a developmental disability. And in fact, the title of your article has to do with the tyranny of low expectations.
Right. Someone from the Civil Rights Department had used that quote when they were talking about this in particular. And yeah, it's something that kind of permeates our culture that we don't expect much from people with developmental disabilities. We don't necessarily think they can work. And that's what has made this kind of an uphill battle for people.
So 2 years after the news broke about this investigation and about a year after the consent decree that the state signed, what changes can you see that have been made on behalf of people like Nick, people with developmental and intellectual disabilities?
Well, there have been quite a few changes at Birch specifically. Efforts to integrate the students more because Birch is located inside Mount Pleasant High School. Originally, it was in the basement wing, and the kids really didn't see their non-disabled peers at all. And now all of the students are integrated in the hallways. And then there are also some integrated classes as well. They've also looked outside of Providence for some options, one of which is called Project Search. It's a program that connects Birch students specifically with internships at the Miriam Hospital in Providence. And they get some job training and money management training. And so that's one way that Birch is dealing with it. But the state as a whole is also really addressing it. And that shows up. There has been a significant jump in the number of people who are working minimum wage jobs. And there has been a big move out of sheltered workshop work as well.
I have to say I was floored by the fact that there are 9 of these sheltered workshops. It seems like something out of another era.
Absolutely. And there are more than that prior. And, you know, some advocates would even say that there are others that, you know, look like a duck and walk like a duck, but they're not calling themselves sheltered workshops.
Now, one of the things you bring up in your article is that with a new governor in place, there's new leadership in the state's programs for people with developmental disabilities. And in fact, the state has backed off of a pledge to do away with sheltered workshops altogether. Casey Nelson, do you think that's the right move?
It's difficult because from the people I spoke with, you know, there's a lot of controversy about closing the sheltered workshops because some people really don't believe that their loved one can work in a normal job. So they want that option available to them. They want them to be able to work and to be able to feel productive, but within a safe setting. And there are places that do sheltered workshops right. There are places that offer their clients minimum wage. So I think that a lot of families, you know, breathed a huge sigh of relief when the new administration came in, because then that allowed for them to kind of have a little bit more time to think about how they wanted their family member to spend their day.
And with the change in the state's attitude and programs for people with developmental and intellectual disabilities who might be interested in finding jobs, there are some people whose lives have really changed. And you met one of those people. Could you tell us a little bit about him?
Sure. His name is Jeff, and he found work at a great restaurant in Providence with the help of a job coach. And he's done really well for himself there. He started out working just a few hours a week. He did so well, and they were so happy with his work that they doubled his hours and raised his pay. And now he's working full time. What I thought was most interesting about his case is that his employer never applied for these special tax credits that all Rhode Island businesses can apply for if they hire people with disabilities. And that's just because they see him as a normal worker and they see him as someone who's capable.
So how has this opportunity to be successful in a work environment, how has that changed his life?
He can provide for his daughter, which I think gives him a lot of pride. He wasn't a very chatty fellow, but you could tell that he, you know, really wanted to be a role model for his child. He wanted to help support his family. And, you know, he wanted to be a valuable member of society, and he was able to do that.
Well, journalist Casey Nelson is the author of a new article in Rhode Island Monthly examining the state's efforts to integrate people with developmental disabilities and find better work opportunities for them. The article hits newsstands this week. Casey Nelson, thanks for speaking with me.
Thanks so much.
Education reporting on Rhode Island Public Radio is funded in part by a grant by the Rhode Island Foundation, Rhode Island's only community foundation, and New England Institute of Technology's Center for Technology and Industry.